and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Brendan.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, we've arrived at the final chapter of the division preview series when we take on Voldemort. Is that the end of that one? I didn't read those books.
I didn't either.
I would guess, as someone who has not seen any of the Star Wars trilogies, Jurassic Park, Titanic, there's no possible way I saw any second. Is Voldemort Lord of the Rings?
No, Harry Potter.
Oh, God.
But the confusing thing is, there's Dumbledore in Harry Potter has a very Gandalf vibe to him, which always threw me off. So I figure it's the same universe.
So when they find the rings, Dumbledore becomes Voldemort.
Yeah. Is it a prequel or a sequel?
They all just sort of come together. I'm starting to realize it's freaking me out a little bit that, like, as much as Jenny posits herself as the pop culture castaway, like, the more that I hear Gary talk, the more closer to that island I feel than ever before. So it's a good place to be. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I'm there, so it's a great place to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what could go wrong, you know?
All right, before we jump into the NFC North preview here, a couple of quick things. We're going to have a mailbag show next week. So this is the official call out for mailbag questions. You can tweet them at us. You can email the mmqb@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review in iTunes and take a screenshot of said review, like, before you submit it. So it's like you got to see the field where, like, you're typing in it. Like, you need that action there. We will guaranteed answer your question. If you already left a 5-star, if you already left a 5-star review, send it. We'll believe you. We're very gullible.
Amazing. I love this.
We also, I was told by Dan Bloom, our wonderful senior producer, to read dramatically the order of the divisions one more time. And again, we have two winners already, so you win nothing if you guess it correctly. But if you'd like to play the home version of this game, you can go right ahead. But let me read these in a fairly dramatic way right now. We started long ago with the AFC North. Then we did NFC West, AFC East, NFC East, AFC West, NFC South, AFC South, and now we have arrived at the NFC North, our final division. That's it. Guess amongst yourselves. Send it if you want, and I'll tell you if you're right if you send it. But we'll reveal the answer next week.
Yeah, exactly. Got a little bit askew based on some developments the last few weeks, but I still feel confident in our order.
It made sense in June. It was practical. Practicality. That's what we do here. And I don't know. I guess before we jump in, we had the Hall of Fame game happen. So we had football-ish action this past week. That felt like the big thing that happened in the NFL world.
When the Hall of Fame game happens, I'm almost never ready, and I don't remember that it's coming on, even though we cover the NFL for a living. And I likened it last night to that first news report of the year where the cicadas are coming, you know, and it just, like, hits you out of nowhere, and you're like, whoa, yeah, of course, it's cicada season. I didn't realize that. And all of a sudden, you're just flipping through the channels, and you're like, it's Ben DiNucci. Like, here we go. We're in football season already. But it was largely unremarkable, which is exactly what you want out of the Hall of Fame game. But it was also nice to see, like, you know, just get those muscles moving again. Like, you know, I found myself sitting on the couch we're taping this after the Hall of Fame game. I found myself on the couch saying, Dwayne Haskins, you know, all right, you know, we can, you know, maybe something happens here, and there's a future. And that is a muscle that of optimism that you don't normally flex throughout the non-football season.
The only Hall of Fame game that I have attended is the one in which the paint logo congealed at midfield, and thus the game didn't happen.
That was a good one.
Yeah,
that was my favorite Hall of Fame game.
That was memorable.
All right, guys, let's jump into the NFC North here and wrap this thing up. As always, we're doing our four categories: biggest offseason additions among veterans, among rookies, most valuable non-quarterback, and most interesting coach, head or assistant. And then, of course, we'll have our Mad Libs and our predictions, our coaches poll at the end of this. We'll call ourselves coaches. But let's start with the biggest offseason addition amongst the veterans here, and we'll start off with Jenny.
Yeah, so I entered the doc first, and I put down what I thought was a clever answer, and then both Gary and Connor later told me they were going to put down the same thing, but I went with Randall Cobb, not because of the impact he'll necessarily have on the field this year, but because it was apparently a key to brokering peace with Rodgers, and I think it's kind of amusing how much Gutekunst tried to distance himself from the signing. I have his quote here. He said, obviously, without Aaron, I don't think we would probably be pursuing that. Randall's still a really good player. Seeing him last night reminded me what an impact he'll have in our locker room and for our football team. But this was a very important thing for Aaron, and that's why we did it. So if it goes awry, don't blame Gutekunst, blame Aaron Rodgers. But Aaron Rodgers needed something. They drafted a receiver in the third round, Amari Rodgers, but he felt like he wanted some impact in personnel decisions. And at the point when he returned to training camp, most of the personnel decisions for the year had already been made, but this was one that they could make, acquiring Cobb, who may not have made the Texans roster anyway. But in any event, it has allowed Rodgers to move forward with something that he considered a win.
Yeah, the Randall Cobb signing by the Texans last offseason was, it didn't really get that much press. It was, in my mind, far and away the most bizarre signing of the offseason because he got, we know this money is not all what it's built up to be, but he got the largest total dollar contract among receivers on the free agent market, which, for a guy who the Cowboys seem not very interested in retaining, and the Texans certainly didn't have a desperate need for wide receiver, and really the entire wide receiver market is so depressed because you just have these really, really good classes coming up every year in the draft, and obviously those guys come in so cheap. But to pay Randall Cobb $9 million annually in 2020 was... it was pretty mind-boggling. It just made no sense. So now that he's moved on to a different team, he's just been the center of like two of the most bizarre transactions of the last two off seasons.
It reminded me a little bit of like negotiating with the toddler in that, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers came in hot and was like, I would like all the years removed from my contract. And they were like, no. And they were like, I would like to be traded to the Broncos. And they were like, no. And then he was just like, I would like Randall Cobb. And they're like, well, okay. I mean, you know, it's just like I would like Kit Kats for breakfast. No, I would like to then go take a nap. Okay, fine. If that's what you really want to do, then go ahead. But yeah, it was just sort of like, I'm sure at the end of all this kicking and screaming, like Brian Gutekunst was probably looking at everybody and being like, this is what's going to make this go away. Fantastic. Like, okay. This is accounting at this point, really. I mean, you're going to spend the money anyway. And so if it's an extra $5 million to pacify somebody and bring his best friend in and a guy who's familiar to everybody else in the locker room, who cares?
I'm glad you read that quote, Jenny, from Gutekunst, because it really, I don't know, that was nice and honest, and I can appreciate that. Connor, why don't you go ahead? Who do you got?
So I went with Dalvin Tomlinson, and the reason I did that was because Jenny took the best answer, and it wasn't because I was going to. I hope that in the pre-show chatter, I was not saying I was going to do that. I was saying I wish I had done that. So there's a big difference there. So I want to make sure that I'm not sounding like a total jerk. But so I picked Dalvin Tomlinson, and the reason is, I mean, Green Bay is obviously the class of this division. and they are propelled almost exclusively by that downhill rushing offense, and then everything boots off of that, and everything is married together. And you know, if you can stop the run with any of these teams that are running this kind of offense, you have at least a slightly better chance of slowing down everything else they're doing, because if they can't run, it doesn't matter what they're making everything else look like in terms of a run. So Dalvin Tomlinson to me is extraordinarily valuable there. Great run-stopping defensive tackle.
It does. It just kind of makes everyone's life easier when you take care of those guys. And it's not super exciting. I don't know if anyone was throwing a party over landing Dalvin Tomlinson here, but he just takes care of the like that obnoxious little thing, stopping the run. Nobody cares about it anymore, but you have a guy who does it, it matters.
It is. It's like the central, like, and it's weird, like, and, you know, Jenny made a great point a few shows ago about more teams drafting these off-ball linebackers. I think you called that last year when we were taping the Weak Side podcast. Like, watch all these teams now draft extra off-ball linebackers because the Buccaneers are doing it. And, you know, but what was the central point of all that, right? Was that the Tampa Bay could stop the run down the stretch. They were the one team, and I hate to sound so anti-analytical here, like almost to the point where this is what it must feel like to be him every day. But like, you have to stop the run. Like, you do. It's not like, it's not a tired cliche that you have to be embarrassed about saying. Like, you have to be able to do that. And that's why there's a reason that some of these guys are so extraordinarily valuable.
So I'm staying in Minnesota for my pick here, and I'm actually going to pair Patrick Peterson and Bashaud Breeland here. It's just going to be a really interesting year for the Vikings. We know how they want to win games, how they want to do this stylistically, that Mike Zimmer dies a little inside every time Kirk Cousins drops back to throw a pass. So they're going to try and do it with, you know, heavy run game and with this defense. And obviously we saw the defense slide back a little last year. They had this huge defection of cornerbacks in the defensive backfield. Now, they bring back Danielle Hunter, who's a, you know, I would put him in the dark horse defensive player of the year candidate class if he is healthy. So you figure that helps the secondary out a little bit. And you still have Harrison Smith back there, who's still very good. But really, I mean, for this to be an elite defense, you need a performance like, you know, what they used to get from Xavier Rhodes like 3 or 4 years ago before he had a little bit of a decline there. They need that guy. Now, Patrick Peterson, I don't know if he's that guy. He's a Hall of Famer. He had a great career. I think if you look at the tape last year, you're not feeling great about this. Although you maybe would have said the same thing about Xavier Rhodes going to Indianapolis last year. He had a nice bounce back season. Maybe the same thing happens with Peterson if that pass rush can cover him up a little bit. And to me, Breeland, I always think of those. There's like that batch of, like, if you were going to rank the cornerbacks in the NFL, it's like cornerback 30 to like cornerback 75. And like, they're all capable of, you know, like some seasons being like, oh, that guy's like a low end number one corner. What a good player. And some seasons it's like, man, that guy's a liability. They got to upgrade there. For some reason, Ronald Darby is a guy who always sticks out in my mind. Like, year to year, he could be pretty good, or he could be, oh, that guy's a problem. We got to get someone good. I think Breeland sort of falls in that category. So they're kind of, I mean, one of these guys kind of has to step up here. Cameron Dantzler's pretty good on the other side. I think you feel good about him going into year two, but one of these guys kind of has to have that, you know, pretty good low end number one corner type of season here if the Vikings are going to have the type of season that they, you know, were used to having a couple of years ago. That's it. Stunned silence.
It's one of those where,
so well.
Yeah, you, after your presentation, like the teacher is just blown away, and it's like, what is a letter grade higher than A that I can give you? Like, we're trying to think of letters that just don't exist. That's the problem.
Well done, Gary. I like it. Thanks, guys. Let's go on. Biggest off-season edition rookie. I'll keep going here because I put myself first. I don't know why I put myself first.
Jenny and I will respond this time.
I'm going with Penei Sewell down in Detroit. I don't know if this Lions team wins more than four games, but look, correct me if I'm wrong, it just sort of has that feeling there where it's like, they've got a good offensive line, Dan Campbell and the whole whatever you think of his shtick, and I can kind of from far away appreciate his shtick. He doesn't seem to be, he seems to realize how absurd he is as a human being, and I think that self-awareness sort of plays well when you're going to do this, you know, kneecap biting type of speeches, and I think that can probably be appreciated by the guys he's coaching here. But I feel like the Lions are a team that maybe overachieves a little bit. I don't think they're a playoff team, but I think they're a team who maybe spoils a season or two and hangs around in games and maybe ends up winning six or seven. But Sewell, obviously, he just, I mean, the things Anthony Lynn will be able to do in this run game with this offensive line, especially with Sewell, who is, you know, I think you might be a little bit worried about his down-to-down consistency as a pass protector, but, I mean, he is like, this is like Trent Williams-type potential as far as a run game goes. So you drop into that offense, and if that ends up being an elite run game and the defense holds on certainly a little bit better than they did under Matt Patricia, I don't know, the Lions just become a little more interesting, a little more threatening than maybe they were a year ago.
Yeah, and I think there was some chuckling over how excited the Lions draft room was when Sewell fell to them. But I mean, okay, yeah, they didn't do anything particularly to get him. They just stayed in their spot and he fell to them. But you can understand celebrating when a talent like that falls to you, that yeah, he should have been a top five talent. He was pushed down by other teams' needs, by so many quarterbacks going high. So if you're the Lions and you sit there and you get Penei Sewell at seven, that is cause for celebration.
I'm curious, you mentioned Dan Campbell and the shtick, and only a third of this group. Are you still team coffee, Jenny? Do you still drink coffee or no?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I don't know if anybody else had seen this, but earlier this week he said that he drinks 2 40-ounce, I guess there's a name for it at Starbucks where you can get the largest coffee, but then they add more coffee to it. And then in each of the 40-ounce coffees, 4 shots of espresso. Am I getting that right?
I think you're doubling the numbers here. I feel like they're 20-ounce coffees, each with 2 shots of espresso.
20-ounce coffees.
40 total
ounces of coffee with 4 shots of espresso.
I mean, it's excessive, yes.
Do you
probably
think,
not good for your heart.
Correct. Yeah. Gary, I know that you you phased out the moment that Dan Campbell didn't say English breakfast tea. But I'm just like, would you be alarmed if you saw that happening at Starbucks? Like if somebody ordered that in front of you, would you be like, okay, that's a lot?
I thought Gary was an Earl Grey guy.
Oh, I thought you were English breakfast.
I like it all. Connor, you were kind enough to get me some Earl Grey for Christmas one year, and that was that was very appreciated. I drink it all though.
Okay. Mm.
But yeah, Jenny, are you like readying the defibrillator if you see someone putting that order in?
Yeah, that is quite a lot of coffee. I think it's, well, what do they say? The more you drink it, the more you need to get a jolt from it. So obviously
right,
he's had a lot of coffee over a long period of time. And but I don't know, like at a certain point you get a little, like for me, if I drink too much coffee, like I find like I can't focus because I'm too jittery. But then my job is also different from a football coach, so maybe that energy is good for him, especially if he's, you know, in this kneecap biting shtick.
So my second question, I tweeted this the other day, and I really am serious about this. Like I've only had like 5 to 10 cups of coffee in my life, and each one of them preempted a complete meltdown. Like I melt into a puddle of like, I just lose my mind. I can't drink, I can't have caffeine. So this is a genuine curiosity. So former boss Peter King for a while was drinking a venti caramel macchiato with 3 to 4 shots of espresso in it.
Yeah, quad.
They call it a quad. Okay, oh boy. And so is that more than, like, is he at the Dan Campbell level, or is what Dan doing even more extreme than this? Like, the coffee math is just kind of lost on me a little bit.
Well, you're right, because Dan Campbell is, in theory, having 4 shots of espresso plus the additional coffee, which, if you're having espresso, I don't know exactly how much the additional coffee compares. Interestingly, his offensive coordinator, Anthony Lynn, I don't think he drinks coffee at all. So imagine being like a person who doesn't drink coffee like you guys are, and you're going to work and the head coach is like chugging all of this coffee. Would you feel ill by that? Interesting question. Someone needs to ask.
Gary and I often feel like, because you're a coffee drinker, Jenny, it's like racing someone on steroids when we're doing this podcast.
Wow.
So, you know.
I didn't know I was being judged like this. This show is revealing a lot of new information.
Connor and I need those glasses with the eyes on them so we can take little mini naps as we, little micro sleeps as we go. Connor, I don't know how we got hired by Peter, though, because neither of us drink coffee. Although I feel like what Peter drinks is more like... Right, it's like the candy version.
Right. There would seem to be the what it lacks in actual coffee, it would make up for in like high fructose corn syrup and all the other things that would theoretically cause you to be jittery.
Right. Yeah. There's the caramel and such. You're right. So yeah, it could be a comparable. That's good, Connor. But in terms of volume of liquid, Dan Campbell is having a lot more, so potentially needs a lot of bathroom breaks. I hope he has one of those head coach offices where there's your own personal bathroom inside of your office. A lot of head coaches have that. Hopefully Dan Campbell does.
Get it in the contract.
Jenny, would you like to go next?
Okay, I will shift gears a little bit here. I picked Justin Fields. It seems like early reports on his performance at training camp have been good, although as we know, that doesn't necessarily mean a lot. But clearly he holds a lot of significance for the Bears franchise. It is Ryan Pace's second chance at drafting a quarterback in the first round. They traded up to get him, and it was a really smart move because people were like, are the Bears going to just stand pat with Andy Dalton? Is this their quarterback? In the draft, they saw an opportunity to go up and get Fields, and they made a move for a player that many thought should have been the third quarterback off the board. So, but a lot is riding on this for Pace's future, for Nagy's future. How long will they get to show? Can they develop Fields? Was this a hit where Mitch Trubisky wasn't? So there's a lot of interesting things, but you know, the Bears built a defense, right, that could contend for a championship. And as we talk about all the time, the shelf life for a defense, this is Gary's point that I'm stealing, isn't that long. So you bring in all these talented playmakers and they made the playoffs, but, you know, weren't in a position to contend much farther than that, given their quarterback situation. So can Justin Fields be that guy and how quickly can he get there?
I don't know. I feel like it's going to be the third quarter of week one when they turn this over to Justin Fields. I just feel like there's no tolerance in that Bears locker room for more crummy quarterback play. And I don't think Andy Dalton is crummy, but I do think Andy Dalton needs like a really good offensive line in front of him because he doesn't, you know, he gets a little erratic in the muddy pocket, as they say. But I don't think it's going to work out with Dalton. And I think it's ready or not, I think Fields is getting thrown in there.
I did a few weeks ago, like just a projection on when all these guys were going to go in. And I agree with you, Gary. I had it at halftime of the Bengals game, right? So that's week two. Week one, they have the Rams. So maybe you don't want Justin Fields' first action to be like off the cuff against Aaron Donald. But week two is phenomenal. I mean, that's just like, you know, you could set him up for success. You could just do the change at halftime and have him running out of the tunnel like Shane Falco in The Replacements and just getting ready to light the world on fire.
See, you do have pop culture reference points, Connor. Only football movies, though.
That's right. That's right. So I stayed in Chicago, and I do think that Jenny's right that Justin Fields will end up being like the biggest, but like I would say that Tevin Jenkins, in a lot of ways, who the Bears drafted in the second round, is almost equally as important because you're hoping that he can bide him some time. And, you know, this isn't just like, this was a good offensive line class, no doubt, but I think there were some people who thought that maybe Tevin Jenkins wouldn't even project as a tackle at the next level. Like, maybe they'd have to move him around a little bit. But, like, he's taking on a very big responsibility out of the gate for a second round pick, which is not something that you see very often. Like, I think the Bears are kind of letting faith take the wheel a little bit here.
Offensive line is so key for Andy Dalton. I think that's what it comes down to. I think Jenkins' performance will almost affect Dalton more than it affects Fields. If you put Fields out, if Fields can protect himself, Andy Dalton, not so much.
They don't call him the Red Rifle for nothing, Gary.
Hey, yeah, that was a super nickname. I think that might have been the most feeble nickname of the. I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to. My take is going to be most feeble nickname of the last decade.
You're a big. Okay. You've been a big nicknames guy, and I will say that it's sort of blown my mind that, like, I think a lot about this now, where you said a few weeks ago that if it wasn't called the air raid offense, nobody would care about the air raid. And you said something else where, like, there was a player, I think, with a particularly, maybe it was like Trey Flowers.
It was Jonathan Allen.
It was, oh, and if he wasn't named Jonathan Allen, like, if his name was, like, Jonathan Angry Pitbull, like, he would be more, he would be more revered, yeah.
So here's, if I could add to that Jonathan Allen take just a little bit, and Jonathan Allen got paid, right? He got his contract, right? So he's, and rightfully, he's a very, very, very good player who's always going to be a little bit, you know, overshadowed by Chase Young in that defense. But if you think about Damon Harrison, I don't know, that's not going to stick with you, but Snacks Harrison, like, yeah, there you go. There is importance in branding. You got to find the right nickname. You can't just attach something to it. I don't think Andy Dalton really needed a nickname anyway, and then Red Rifle is kind of like, eh.
Well, a lot of times Aaron Donald has kind of a generic name.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is he?
He doesn't have a nickname, does he?
I don't, not that I know of.
Well, have you guys ever looked at the Pro Football Focus or Pro Football Reference
yes.
nickname section? It's jarring.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of times there is things that players are called that I never knew. So Aaron Donald does not have a nickname on here. But for example, if you go down the list, Tom Brady, the Pharaoh. When did who calls him the Pharaoh? I
there's a producer there just messing around, just putting his own in there. He's copywriting him, and then putting him in there and seeing if he can make a buck off of it.
Did you ever call Philip or Aaron Rodgers A-Rod?
Well, I have heard that, but it's incredibly confusing.
Yes, because there's already a more established A-Rod, or Alex Rodriguez was more established when he sort of came on, when
also,
Aaron Rodgers came on.
J.J. Watt is apparently nicknamed the Milkman.
Like, no,
well, that's
no
a new one.
That's someone sitting on, like, a warehouse full of, like, milk carton with J.J. Watt on it, like, T-shirts, and is trying to move them. Like, you know, you take those risks, and you hope one of these stick here.
I'm just looking at this, like, very angry photo of, like, he takes all of his pictures like a real tough guy, and then next to it, it says, Justin James Watt, a.k.a. the Milkman. Like, what was that? When did that happen? You know what? Here's a good opportunity, right, if you're still mm-hmm. listening to the show. Make up the worst player nickname you can possibly think of and send it to us. And we will read the best one on the show next week. Famous
idea.
Player that doesn't have one on Pro Football Reference. So look at Pro Football Reference. Aaron Donald is a good one. It would have to be like, well, I'm not going to tell anybody how to do their job. But make us laugh, entertain us.
God, the more random, the better. But yeah, absolutely. Now, I love that on Pro Football Reference because it is ridiculous. The other thing I love, and I'm sorry, this is a bit of a tangent, but I'm gonna go anyway because I've started. Stats Inc. We have like the Stats Inc. Account, and you can go in there, and I use it for a couple of sports because I'm a baseball fan and I sort of track baseball even if I don't cover it. But on the baseball one, they have pronunciations for literally every name on their file. So like they have the phonetic pronunciation of like Joe Smith. Like, just in case you didn't know how to say Joe Smith, here it is. J, like the O in the line. Yeah, so there you go.
Amazing.
Where did we end up? That was Tevin Jenkins. So now we're on to most valuable non-quarterback, and we will throw it back to Connor.
You know, the difficulty of being the laziest person in the group and thus the last to the Google Doc. both Jenny and Gary, I had phenomenal answers, but I'm going to go with Khalil Mack just because I do feel like there is still an element of this, much like we were talking about with Dalvin Tomlinson, where he has the ability to interrupt things that other teams do well. Like Kirk Cousins gets rid of the ball really quickly, but Khalil Mack gets into the backfield really quickly. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to be bootlegging a lot. Khalil Mack is fast enough to get over there and bring him down. He's still that singular force kind of player. And so I think that there's a lot of value there. And with the right imagination on the defensive side of the ball can still be that player.
Also, you know, Connor, any opportunity to kind of ding another team that plays in the AFC West. Just saying.
You know, Khalil Mack doesn't have a nickname, by the way. I just looked. What a player. And who would trade the guy like that, you know?
It's in all seriousness, like, I know like there was an analytics community that like gave an award to the Raiders for that trade and that stuff. And I do understand the value of, you know, getting the eyes on the cheap rookie contracts, et cetera, et cetera. But part of the reason that you would justify trading Khalil Mack is you'd be like, well, you know what? When he hits his late 20s, there's going to be a decline. He might be good, but he's no longer going to be good. He's still at that level. He's 30 now. This will be his age 30 season. But the Bears have gotten like every bit of Khalil Mack for three seasons so far. And unless you drafted a Khalil Mack, which the Raiders did not, and it's very difficult to do, that's more valuable than, you know, getting those lotto tickets.
Absolutely. And you look at the Rams, you know, they find a way to keep the star players and build a roster out that way. And in his absence, the Raiders have struggled to generate pass rush and to, you know, defense was obviously a big issue last year. So, yeah.
I do feel like I'm being gaslit every time John Gruden says, like, well, it's hard to find pass rushers. You know what I mean? Like, and he's just like, yeah, we signed Yannick Ngakoue. You know, we're going after these guys, drafting a lot of guys, Cleveland Farrell, because it's hard to find pass rushers. And every time, like, I'm just sitting there by myself in my house saying, you gave away the, like, anyway, we need to move on because
it's a special feed just beamed onto Connor's laptop.
Yeah, we need to.
I feel like this was set up for him to answer Khalil Mack. So I went to Davante Adams. Obviously, we know what he does for the Packers offense. He's the one player that Rodgers has not complained about. Obviously, he has this top five receiver, maybe top one receiver. If you talk to defensive backs around the league, they say that Adams is very hard to guard off the line of scrimmage. He's a tremendous route runner, and watching him and Rodgers be able to work together is really a thing of artwork, a thing of art, a piece of art. Not really sure what I'm going for there, but... you know, it's been the one receiver that Rodgers has. Now, unfortunately, Adams was not drafted in the first round. So the whole Packers not drafting a receiver in the first round little narrative continued. But they got a great guy in the second round and one of the most valuable players of any position in the NFL.
Davante Adams, I think, is kind of exhibit A. And maybe it's not quite the case anymore because it's a different system that they're running with Matt LaFleur, obviously, than they ran with Mike McCarthy when it was a little more, sandlot style. Aaron Rodgers is going to sort of make it up as he goes after the snap. But Davante Adams was terrible his first two seasons. Like, legitimately, like, really, really bad. I remember thinking the second season, like, are they going to have to, like, cut him after this season? He had, it was some ridiculous thing where, like, he had over 100 targets and a total of, like, 480 yards or something like that. I should pull up those exact numbers. They were just, he couldn't separate, he couldn't catch the ball when it came to him. And then all of a sudden, he just broke through. And a lot of guys over the years, it was like, you had to play a couple seasons with Aaron Rodgers to be able to sort of get on that wavelength with him. And you know, again, maybe it's not quite the case because they are a little more schemed up under Matt LaFleur, but that is kind of, if you were going to make an argument for the Packers not drafting, receivers in the first round and waiting for that maybe 2 or 3 year learning curve, I mean, that's kind of it. But yeah, Davante Adams is just incredibly good now.
Yeah, I, to the point where it just made no sense to, like, when you were stalemating Aaron Rodgers, you were going to continue to stalemate him as well, you know? Like, if you were going to develop Jordan Love, like, that would be the most integral person that you would need in order to aid in that development, right?
By the way, that was his 2015 season, second season, that was 94 targets, 483 yards, one touchdown, which is like, I mean, you are barely participating in a football game when your numbers are that. And then all of a sudden, he just had this monster breakthrough. That's 5.1 yards per target. That's like, that's really bad for a wide receiver. Yeah. It's nice. Nice story. Nice that he got better at football.
Good for you.
I am. We'll send them some business cards. I'm staying in Green Bay. I'm going with Jaire Alexander here. And again, I think we'd all sort of agree that Khalil Mack is maybe the guy we would most want this season among the non-quarterbacks if we were building a team in this division. But Jaire Alexander is just really interesting because obviously a great player, you know, legitimate like top 10 corner in the league. With a chance to sort of move into that conversation, you know, up there with Jalen Ramsey and whoever else you want to put up there among the sort of best of the best of the position. But Jaire Alexander, he's going to be really important for a new defensive coordinator coming in there, Joe Barry. And, you know, having Alexander out there as a true shutdown guy just gives you so many more options as a defensive coordinator, what you want to do. So, I'm curious to see how this works out with the new defense. And with that, I do want to throw it to most interesting coach, head, or assistant in the division. And we will start with Jenny.
Yeah, well, that's a good transition because I picked Joe Barry, the Packers' new defensive coordinator. Of course, the moment that Scotty Miller had that touchdown right before the half in the NFC Championship game and Mike Pettine had single high safety, so the corners were alone outside and basically allowed for this touchdown in the waning seconds of the first half, which kind of started the snowball effect of the Bucs winning that game. It seemed like his fate was sealed there, which is the downside of being a defensive coordinator on a team led by an offensive head coach, because you take responsibility for that unit the same way that the head coach would in a way. So Pettine's future was essentially sealed by that play. But then the question was, where do the Packers go from here? They went with Joe Barry, who was last with the Rams, previously had been a defensive coordinator in Washington, but most recently was the linebackers coach for the Rams. And, you know, in some ways, maybe an underwhelming choice. You know, that defense was run by Brandon Staley last year with the Rams. So perhaps they're thinking he was part of that and, you know, can bring some of those ideas to the Packers. But, you know, wasn't like a flashy hire in any way. And I think it'll be interesting to see what direction he takes. Obviously, they have some good pieces on the defense, Jaire Alexander being one. But there's a lot of pressure on that role as well, because when things went awry in that NFC Championship game, a lot of the blame was on the defense. And I mean, there were other things that were discussed more so, but that play at the end of the half was really a turning point in the game. And Aaron Rodgers is already disgruntled with the team, and this is kind of a turning point year to see how things go. So there's a lot of pressure on Joe Barry to get the defense up to a standard that matches Aaron Rodgers and perhaps meets Aaron Rodgers' expectations. And in a way, how Joe Barry does his job could influence if Aaron Rodgers wants to stay in Green Bay.
That's a really good point, which is why I sort of cheated on the on the prompt, and I went with Jim Leonard, who's the Wisconsin defensive coordinator, the University of Wisconsin defensive coordinator, longtime Jet, as Jenny and I know, and as it always comes back to the 2010 Jets. But he also was the first choice for that job. He was the first guy that Matt LaFleur reached out to. They wanted to hire Jim Leonard. He's been sort of a rising name in coaching circles for a long time. He took only 2 years to get that defensive coordinator job at Wisconsin. Maybe he wants to stay there long term. I don't know the plans, but I thought that would have been a really interesting hire. And it's almost like double pressure on Barry. Like you said, it's a difficult spot. You're in a tight window, and you also kind of know that there's somebody nearby that is connected to ownership and coaching that they're also keeping an eye on to be like, you know, this is the person we really wanted, and Wisconsin had a phenomenal defense again this year, and I think we're going to go in another direction, you know?
Great answer, Connor. Very creative.
And the Jim Leonard thing, I mean, he's connected to Mike Pettine. I mean, he played for Mike Pettine for so many years, and I'm shocked neither of you brought up the 2010 Jets at this point. But yeah, it's just really interesting because there was a Scotty Miller play that sort of defined that defensive performance, and you know, maybe a couple of other slip ups by Kevin King there, but you go back to the previous season's NFC title game where the 49ers just sort of kept on handing the ball to Raheem Mostert, who would run 80 yards untouched, and that was sort of, we've had two meltdowns, maybe just a mini meltdown is what you call it, but they had substitution issues in that Bucs loss. They had a lot of issues on defense that day, so you know, a lot of times it comes down to one game. I mean, if they have another meltdown in the playoffs defensively, it's just kind of like, well, more of the same. And if they hang on, yeah, then it will be considered a good hire.
Being at that 49ers-Packers game, too, the year before was stunning in that, like, all the resources that they had allocated in that game personnel-wise to stop the pass. And then, you know, Raheem Mostert was gaining, I think, like 7.5 yards a carry in that game. Was it like, rarely do you see a team in the conference championship game get gouged that readily in the run. And while the 49ers are a great run team, and that's sort of the bread and butter of what they do, I was shocked that the personnel did not reflect that. And there just didn't seem to be an ability or an understanding of how to stop that. So like you said, I mean, the Scotty Miller play and all that on top of the year before, on top of anything else that had happened, you know, it really left them with no choice.
It did. That 49ers game just felt like a college game. It felt like watching, I don't know, like Ohio State play Rutgers or something, where it's just like, yeah, they're just gonna run it for 80 yards like 8 times in this game, and that's gonna be the way it goes. But I'm staying on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going with Sean Desai, the new defensive coordinator for the Bears here. And I've just been fascinated by this Bears defensive performance over the past 3 seasons. And I'm a big believer in that you can set yourself up to force turnovers, but there's just sort of a luck aspect in it that, you know, sometimes the ball, you get a couple fumble recoveries, you get a couple tipped interceptions, stuff like that. When the Bears were absolutely elite league best defense in 2018, which is the year that they really, you know, they carried the offense into the postseason there, they led the league with 36 takeaways. The last 2 years combined, they had 37 under Chuck Pagano. So they're trying to recapture a little bit what they had under Vic Fangio. And, you know, we'll see if they can sort of manufacture these a little bit better. I think they're in a position where the luck is just sort of going to naturally come back to them to an extent, and they'll fall somewhere in between there. But the other really interesting thing is here, I mean, Kyle Fuller is kind of built for this defense that you'd run as like a Vic Fangio defense here, sort of, you know, an off-the-ball technician here. They had to get rid of Kyle Fuller. He was a cap casualty, and if you're going to criticize Ryan Pace, obviously everyone's going to jump on the Trubisky thing. I think there's a long history of evaluators who have just been wrong on a quarterback. I think that's life. I think if you are going to make a more rightful criticism of Pace's roster building here. It's he's kind of mangled the salary cap at a time when he's not paying his quarterbacks, and it cost him a guy in Kyle Fuller. So Fuller's gone. They might end up starting Desmond Trufant. And Desmond Trufant was a fine player in his heyday, but he couldn't really cover anyone in Detroit last year, and that's going to be a huge issue if they can't cover, let alone force turnovers here. So I think it's a tall order for Desai with his Bears defense that obviously has to get back to a kind of elite level if they're going to be they were a playoff team a year ago, but let's say a more legitimate playoff team. All right, well let's go back to the Mad Libs, the final Mad Libs for now. We'll probably do it. We'll bring it back at some point.
Yeah.
Once I get a firmer grasp on the English language. Yeah.
You've come a long way, Connor.
I had suggested, because we're going to do the mailbag show, and then we really have two other shows to fill before we get to the sort of like big, you know, Labor Day, here's the season preview show. I had suggested that maybe we do like a best of Mad Lib show. We do like a clip show. Like we just mail it in that week.
Yeah, I was going to say anything to not have to actually do the podcast would be like fantastic.
I mean, this hour spent with you guys is just really rough every week. So
we already have wonderful ideas for those shows up our sleeve. Yeah, you will not believe them when you hear them. Connor, you want to do the Mad Libs?
yeah, let's do it. So this is going to involve little bit of singing from both of my friends this week, so hopefully you guys are ready. Hopefully you have your pipes warmed up. Who's starting off? It doesn't matter because both of you have to sing. So
I think it's Gary's turn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Gary, give me your favorite line from the Friends theme song. You know the Friends theme song?
Yeah. I don't know many lines of it. Okay. I'm going through in my head, by the way. This is my inner monologue that I'll put out there since it's a podcast. So no one told you. I guess it's your love life's DOA.
Because
I got to the second line in the first stanza, and then I was unsure what was left in that song.
Perfect. That's great. Jenny, so just a little bit of something to preempt it, but it's just one of my favorite things ever. That guy, Christoph Waltz, who's in a bunch of Quentin Tarantino movies, he went on Jimmy Kimmel, and he sang the Sesame Street theme song, but under the guise that it was actually a very sad song. Like it was somebody dreaming of a beautiful place and saying, can you please tell me how to get to Sesame Street? Like he wasn't there. He was in a dark place and he was asking someone to please tell him how to get to Sesame Street. And so, Jenny, I'm going to kind of ask you in that vein to just give me a line from the Sesame Street theme song and just under the understanding that I'm going to use it in a sad way.
Oh, okay. In a sad way. I feel like we should have been switched here because I'm a Friends aficionado and Gary has young children, but I will do my best. I don't know that this is sad.
It doesn't have to be sad. I'm just warning you that I'm going to say it in a sad
way. Okay. So sweeping the clouds away? Is
that's
that
perfect.
A lyric in the song? I think it is. Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, Gary, the worst television show that you stuck with for far too long of a period of time?
How I Met Your Mother.
Got it.
Which was fine for like two seasons, and then it was just, it was endless.
Jenny, like an uncomfortably hairy insect.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Centipedes aren't hairy, are they?
Centipedes are hairy.
I think it counts. Yeah.
Okay, centipede.
I don't think it made it to air, but when Connor and I were doing a show once, a centipede crawled near my feet, and I freaked out, and it was like a 45-minute delay while I tried to hunt it in my basement.
Wow.
I had
I'm glad I picked that.
My first just a quick centipede aside, my first postgraduate apartment when Jenny and I were working together at the Star Ledger was routinely infested with centipedes, very large centipedes. And my landlord at the time posited it as a good thing because he said if there are centipedes, then there is nothing else because they devour all other insects. And so really, they're there to protect you. And I was like, so what you're saying is you're not going to spray the apartment. And he's like, of course not. So
I remember this. Maybe that's why it was on my mind. I think Connor, I think of centipedes. Glad you're in a better place now, Connor.
Much better, yeah. Just tarantulas and ants and wolf spiders. So, Gary, your favorite menu item at Dairy Queen?
Ooh.
Flurry? Do they call it a flurry?
Blizzard.
It's a blizzard. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. I knew it was some sort of storm front.
That's the only answer, Gary. That's the right one.
What kind of blizzard? If you could be more specific.
I haven't been to Dairy Queen since I was like 4. Do they have chocolate?
I mean,
cookies, Oreo?
Oreo.
I feel like
Oreo.
I saw that
Oreo.
In the
Oreo,
commercial.
Yeah. Yep,
I saw it in an ad and it looked good. So, yeah, let's go Oreo Blizzard.
Just remember, if you ever go back, Gary, and they don't serve it upside down, it's free. Did you know that?
Is that true?
Mm-hmm, because they're supposed to show you that the soft serve ice cream is of such a consistency that it's spoonable but still thick enough that if they hold it upside down, it doesn't fall out of the cup. That's like their trademark.
Whoa.
And so if they don't do that, it's free. Don't forget that. Everybody listening to this podcast, be sure to bother the young teens mm-hmm. who are working at Dairy Queen just trying to make some summer money and forget to serve it upside down. It's very important.
Go ruin someone's day. Tell them the MMQB sent you.
And we'll send you a free sticker. Okay. Jenny, just in your periphery, kind of like a smooth, dull, nothingness object that you thought you might use more often than you actually do. Like something that you can see that's like very dull and boring and you thought you might get some use out of it, but you really haven't.
Okay, so something that's in my house?
Yeah, kind of in your periphery if there's something that stands out to you.
Okay. A dull object. Like a candle?
Candle. That's good. Like
I always buy candles, but then I never light them.
Can you be more specific about the kind of candle that you're thinking of?
Okay, yes. I have a Fjord candle that I bought in Copenhagen. And I've never
this
once
is good.
Lit it.
Fjord?
Yeah.
Fjord?
That's correct.
Okay, perfect. That actually fits so much better than I don't know if you guys can tell, but oftentimes I want you to give me a certain answer. But sometimes yeah. I'm pleasantly surprised when the answer is so much better than anything that I could have tried to force you to say. Gary, an animal that you look at that often gives you the impression that it's angry at you.
I would go with... I feel like I'm going to embarrass myself with my lack of knowledge of animals again. I would go with a... when we go to the zoo, the turtles always look pretty disappointing when they when they eye you.
Sure
yeah,
do.
Like the big tortoise, terrapin? Can I go terrapin? Or is that too specific?
No, that's good. Big, okay. Big old scary, big old scary turtle. Jenny, your favorite like hot side dish that's like of a creamy consistency.
Mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes, perfect. We would have also accepted polenta.
Polenta's
Jenny,
great.
I know that you're you could do mashed turnips. I'm sure.
Yeah,
parsnips, cauliflower.
Yeah,
yeah,
cauliflower. Yeah.
Yep. That was perfect. Gary, glad you got this one. Your go-to wedding dance move with kind of the accompanying sound that you make when you do it.
Okay, so I use this on a past Mad Lib, so it's the robot, and I do the robot noises.
Did I ask
noises.
You this already?
No, yes. We had a wedding dance.
Oh, no.
It's okay.
But it wasn't like your, it was just name a wedding dance. It wasn't like,
okay.
That sort of thing.
So
I also I have a Gary Dance. I also have, I need a partner, but I need some, I do like the Upside Turtle again. That's it. These are all repeats. You do like the Upside Down Turtle, like you just get on the floor and then someone just spins you until you, I don't know, either vomit like or that. Embarrass or yourself in some other way.
What I'm doing, you know, for the video folks here, I'm gonna kind of do one of these, like, so.
Yep.
You're just gonna watch me and tell me, and then I'm gonna lean back into the microphone. But like,
yes, it's like a helpless turtle.
A helpless turtle, and then when you're on your back, you're probably doing something like that, like ah.
Or
like,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or just vomiting. I mean, you could do that too.
Is there like a demand for this dance move, or is it just
no? Not at all. Okay. It happens, but nobody likes it.
Yeah. Hard to imagine that.
Jenny, what's the most critically important aspect of pancakes for you? Like the element that makes the pancakes for you?
Oh, well, fluffiness.
Fluffiness. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Rounding down here. Gary, the most critical muscle for you that in the process of lifting furniture?
The quads.
Quads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quadriceps. Good. Jenny, an adjective for something free and untamed. Like if you see something very free and untamed, you would say that it's what?
Wild.
Okay. That's good. Didn't leave you much of a choice there.
Pretty much the only word.
Gary, your favorite method of preparing meat?
I microwave everything.
Microwave.
Like everything.
Definitely not the air fryer.
Yeah, no, not the air fryer.
Not the air fryer, but I do want to add, my wife pointed out a plus of the air fryer is it doesn't make the house so warm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you to your wife for helping to restore the reputation of air fryers.
We're building back.
Something we were all worried about. Jenny, last one here. Your favorite, like, I don't know what school lunch... I don't know if you were a school lunch kid, if you bought your lunch at school, but which one really got you kind of fired up?
I remember this. I used to bring my lunch, except for the days that there was the make your own hot dog bar.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Oh, what a good school.
Yeah, it was really good. It was like on Thursdays. I remember I would pack my lunch every other day. I began packing my lunch in first grade because my first grade teacher during parent-teacher conferences, the only feedback she gave my dad was that I was a food waster and that I threw too much of my lunch away. So my parents were like, okay, from here on out, we will have you pack your lunch so that you don't get in trouble for being a food waster. But on hot dog bar days, it was, you know, I had to buy my lunch.
Wow. What a horror, like, you know.
Yeah.
It was almost like she just wanted to get a dig in. Like, you know, like you had good grades, you were showing up on time, and this lady just had an axe to grind, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a 6-year-old being a food waster, it's pretty harsh criticism, but, you know, obviously it stuck with me.
Well, I will say, I don't know if this helps erase any of the trauma of that deeply entrenched memory, but you gave two of probably the two best answers that I've ever had in the Mad Libs. So I'm very thrilled to.
Can I just say real quick before you unveil this, Connor? Connor was doing some magazine reporting and missed our pre-production meeting, but. Scott Brody, our executive producer, pointed out, he's like, I love how Connor always praises all of Jenny's answers and none of theirs. Which you didn't know was your shtick, but is clearly your shtick.
That's great. See, all the time that I take to craft bits, and then the one bit that I didn't craft is the one that catches on.
For me, you're just like Jenny's first grade teacher.
Oh, old Mrs. So-and-so. all right. So, while the Packers were on the run to the AFC Championship game last year, everyone was all, your love life's DOA. But after Aaron Rodgers decided to hate the Packers for getting him great receivers, coaches, and offensive line, they were more like, sweeping the clouds away. The entire off-season was like How I Met Your Mother. The main character was unengaging and often had centipede-type facial hair. Rogers was the hero, the anti-hero, and the Oreo Blizzard. Just a big old Oreo Blizzard. It seems he'll play well, though, and the Packers will win the division. The Vikings are led by human fjord candle, Kirk Cousins. That was good. And like some of your cousins you see at Thanksgiving, he has strong opinions on the vaccine. Hey-o. The Vikings head the Vikings head coach is an angry turtle, and he seems very angry that the Vikings are always kind of good but not ever good enough, and that will probably continue well into 2021. Meanwhile, the Bears were a team that were just really stuck in the mashed potatoes before general manager Ryan Pace went all, and I was doing the turtle, and drafted Justin Fields. He made Bears fans feel very fluffy inside. They will no doubt be a great success. And then you have the Lions, who are led by real-life quadriceps Dan Campbell. The Lions had a chance to hire a lot of people as their head coach, but opted for a man with wild eyes and a microwaved heart. While Jared Goff is still the quarterback, anything is possible when you get fired up by the big make-your-own-hot-dog bar man, Dan Campbell.
Yes! Yes!
That was good. That was good.
Oh my God. Kirk Cousins being a human fjord candle is like, it's just like, I didn't know a perfect answer existed. And then, you know, and here it was, you know?
I'll have to tweet out a photo of said fjord candle when the show airs.
Yes. Follow Jenny for a tweet of the fjord candle.
Follow Jenny. And just a reminder, we are on YouTube and we send the links out sometimes. But if you want a sense of the Ryan Pace as a turtle dance, you got to watch on YouTube.
You got to watch.
Oh, that was good.
All right, well done, everybody.
Let's have less fun and reveal our coaches poll order of finish. And look, I think there are some mild surprises here. As surprising as you can get, I think, for a 14 division. Last place, the Lions, but not unanimously. The Lions did get a third place vote here. They had 4 points. In third place, we had the Vikings with 6 points. I think that's mildly surprising. Where you got? I mean, you guys both picked them second place, so you shouldn't be surprised at all. I'm surprised. The Bears with 8 points are in second, and then unanimously first place. Is the Packers here, and we're going to do Super Bowl or not in just a moment, but there's one thing I just wanted to ask your guys' opinion on this real quick, and again, we don't need to deep dive the vaccination stuff. It's going to be a storyline all season, quite frankly, but the fans are back. If Kirk Cousins plays poorly, is he going to be subjected to a heavy amount of like vaccination-related heckling this year from the fans, from the home fans, I would think?
That's an interesting point. Yeah, because the way that has been set up is it's a competitively disadvantageous decision, you know, in addition to the public health concerns over not choosing to get the vaccine. The NFL has basically tried to compel players to get the vaccine by making it a competitive advantage if you do. And we've already seen the impacts of this with Kirk Cousins having to sit out practices for being a close contact. So clearly the team is frustrated, and they were already frustrated with Kirk Cousins. And I think the same goes for the fan base. So that's interesting, Gary, if there will be signs and such on that topic.
I think if anything, the team is going to be more upset because, and I don't mean to make light of this situation, but he said in a recent interview that, well, we'll just meet outside all season. Like, they practice in Minnesota. It's going to be very, very cold in October, November, and December. Like, if I'm Kellen Mond, I'm like, I'm not putting on a coat to go outside just because you don't want to feel a little woozy for a day. That seems ridiculous to me.
It's cold outside, but they play in a dome as well. So it's not even like you can make the argument like, well, it's good to be in the elements anyway and get used to it. Like, no, you'll play maybe, I don't
know. Does it count if they met at the dome? Like, would that be outside enough? Like, does a dome stadium like that, like,
yeah,
does that count as outside?
I guess they could open the roof.
Could open the roof, yeah.
Do they have a retractable roof?
No, they just have the thing that all the birds fly into.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Does the roof open?
Okay, I thought it opened, but I could
Wait,
be wrong.
Hold on.
I think
if only there
I
were
think
some
the side
way to look
opens
it
or
up.
Something. Yeah, but you know, it's an interesting question, and it's just sort of, I think you raise a good point, Connor. It's sort of perplexing the other lengths that Kirk Cousins wants to go through with the plexiglass around him, which is not effective, as all studies have shown that the plexiglass, you know, it's basically the air within the room. And if you are smoking in a room, you can see that smoke fills the room. It's the same idea. The plexiglass will not prevent that from there being any spread or meeting outside. All of these things are just curious solutions to something to which there already is a solution.
And he's not the only one. I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson has now missed 8 days of practice. You know, I know we're on the that division, but it's stunning to me that, you know, I think there are a lot of quarterbacks that we just don't know. And we probably, you know, maybe teams will be able to hide it for at some point in time. But it, to me, it would be extraordinarily disadvantageous, not to mention the ethical question of like why you would get it or why you wouldn't get it. I mean, you're popping into a lot of different offices all day. You're going to be constantly around, if you're Kirk Cousins, older coaches who might theoretically be at high risk. Like, doesn't that kind of cross your mind at all as something that might bother you or might be an issue? But I don't know. I would guess if it leads to a problem, a suspension, if you're knocked out for 10 days and you knock somebody else out for 10 days, I would guess that the fans would probably be pretty upset. Yeah.
Yeah, Jenny put it perfectly. Connor put it very well as well. But Jenny put it perfectly. Everyone's looking for these, like, now completely, like, out-of-the-box, like, Rube Goldberg solutions. And it's like, well, there's a really easy one. You know, you don't have to go down to NASA and, like, get fitted for, like, a spacesuit for the 53-man roster. Like, you can do this other thing. Let's do our Super Bowl or not. And we will start with the Packers. Are the Packers Super Bowl contenders? Yes or no?
Yes.
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 Okay. The Bears. Are the Bears Super Bowl contenders? I think no.
No. But playoffs.
I would say yes, because here's the only reason why. You just don't know. Like, we don't know what Justin Fields looks like. And while a rookie quarterback probably can't win you the Super Bowl, like, it's just one of those things where we've never seen Matt Nagy with a... And again, this could expose Matt Nagy as being just another Andy Reid guy that gets hired and ends up being ultimately an uninteresting play caller. Or, like, he's actually really good and Justin Fields unlocks something that, like, I mean, he was getting Mitch Trubisky routinely to the playoffs, you know? And so, you know, maybe Justin Fields unlocks something in this offense that we just don't know. I'm just saying that there's a very high and low possibility here and I'm ready to believe. Barely.
Fair. Right. Fair enough. Yeah.
how about the Vikings? See, I say yes on the Vikings.
I would say yes on the Vikings.
I would say no.
Playoffs, though, you think, Jenny?
Yeah, playoffs. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the where they're at with Kirk Cousins, is that you're playoffs, but you're not Super Bowl. Maybe that's an overstatement, but that's my hot take of the day.
It's almost like you have a mask, which is good, but then you have something else that's so much better, but you can't get there somehow.
Yeah. Great analogy,
Connor. With the Super Bowl being the vaccine. just an interesting how that to look at it that way.
And the Lions, I'm going to assume we're all no on Super Bowl, but should Lions be thinking playoffs? Possibility. Reasonable goal.
I would say no, with the caveat that I think, Gary, to pay you my first compliment ever, you put it really well earlier in the show that I do think that they're like, it's almost going to, I've been phrasing it as like the poor man's Titans. Like they're just going to be like, you know, just very annoying to play. Like you're not going to want to go there and play them because like they could, you know, pull a passive aggressive Marty Morningwig and run the ball 45 times and beat you and do it well. And Dan Campbell could just have everybody amped up on coffee and that's that, you know? And so I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but could they win like 7 games out of nowhere? Yeah, I think that's totally possible.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. I'd say no, but I think they'll win more games than you think they'll win.
Yeah, I wanted to say yes, because I do kind of like the pieces they have on offense. I mean, I don't love it, but just looking at this defense, and I'm really curious to see what Aaron Glenn comes up with here, but they just, on paper, just look really shorthanded on defense, and we'll see. You know, maybe they unlock some things, but I don't know. Yeah, I'll give a reluctant no, though. But I did. It's been 18 months, and I did get my compliment from Connor, so
yes.
It's all worth it. Productive it was all worth show, it in then. The end.
There you go.
All right, one more reminder before we go. We will have the mailbag show next week. You can send your questions to us on Twitter. You can email them to the mmqb@gmail.com. And once again, if you screenshot a 5-star review for iTunes and screenshot it before you submit it, we will guarantee to answer your question. Or if you've already left a 5-star review and just want to send it, that's fine too. We will we'll take it all. But we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.